Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Empire, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
This is episode 139, BHA Armed Forces Initiative, with Justin Spruill. On this episode of Huntivore, Nick is joined by Justin Spruill of the Armed Forces Initiative of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Justin is a volunteer who dedicates his time towards his passion for the outdoors and being able to explore the amazing landscapes of our public lands. Not only are the lands important, but Justin shares his passion for wild harvests becoming amazing table fare. He gives details on an incredible dish for ducks. One heck of a great conversation on this episode of Huntivore. Well, hey, folks. Beautiful evening here in Michigan. I tell you, it's abnormal. I don't want to say abnormal, but it's warm. Ground is not frozen. Here we are. By the time this episode drops, it'll be Thursday, and it'll be maybe a week and a half away from Christmas. I think that's how people are always thinking Christmas is going to be, this frozen winter wonderland. At least that's what we hope for. Definitely doesn't turn out all the time like that. Usually ends up being a muddy mess. And yeah, a great opportunity, though, for sportsmen and for anglers. Well, I shouldn't say anglers, just because the water is going to be super cold without any ice. But at the same time, small game is going to be rip firing here. We've got late season deer kicking up on us. We just finished up with muzzleloader. So, yeah, we're putting the orange away. If guys wanted to get their arrows out, get the bows back out, this is the time to do it. I think I'm also going to drop it officially now. I am done for the season. I'm not going to partake in late season deer hunting. I know. I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry. But I got my two that I took with, one with a bow, the buck that I got, and then I got my doe on Thanksgiving with a firearm. I got my bonus deer from the roadside. She's been all cut up. And so salvage season is definitely underway here in Michigan. Anything you can find in the ditches that's been a fresh kill is always up for game. But as far as me pursuing venison, I think my year is complete. Does feel a little light this year, but that's going to be okay. I've got plenty still left in the freezer from last year. And, I want to get after that stuff before the freezer burn starts to take over. So we're definitely going to be putting up a lot when it comes to either some shredded that I do barbacoa style, or just some shredded veni, and then banking a lot of that stuff into ground. My boys are eating. They're getting big. They're getting big. So we want to make sure that we keep them full of venison here this winter. But anyway, that's enough about me. We're going to get into the reason why we are here. For most of us, we love to escape to the outdoors. We want to get away from lights, noise, people, and distractions. I would even say it's not even just a want to escape, but it is an absolute need to escape. Today, I get to join conservation with a gentleman here who finds the outdoors as a place to heal, find meaning, and recover from intense trauma. These folks use our public lands as a place, as a new mission. I'm joined by Justin Spruill. He's of the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and it's of the Armed Forces Initiative. Justin, thank you so much for hopping on the show this afternoon. Tell me just a little bit, how is your season going out there in Washington proper, way out west? What are things looking like for you? What have you been able to bag this season?
Oh, this is I'll start this out with, I am a very terrible big game hunter. I originally come from Texas, and so I'm used to a very specific, you sit in the field, you shoot the whitetail that's been coming in, you've been watching them all year. So this has been a very different game for me. I've been here for about 10 years and still am just a bad big game hunter, which is okay because I spend most of my time doing small game. I got into duck hunting a couple of years ago, and I can't stop. I usually, every weekend is a duck hunt. Most day, like once this season rolls around, I take off random days during the week. Sea ducks, we just kind of have, everything here. You can get a lot of species here in Washington. So if I'm not hunting a wildlife refuge, I'm hunting up north dry fields, or I'm going out on sea duck on somebody's boat. And so my duck season's been going great. But the freezer, as far as game meat, as big game meat, kind of going down. I had a great pheasant season, getting to connect with some people. And so, my small game's going great. big game. I keep just ignoring myself. I actually, over the Thanksgiving break, I run a pheasant mentorship program to connect service members to dog handlers here on base. And so somebody wanted to hunt with me on Friday. And I was like, all right, great. I'll go and Black Friday, I'll go hunt with you. And I walk out my door and there is a herd of elk surrounding my deer stand. And I'm like, well, that's about the way my world works. And so I hop in the truck and just expect to never see them again. You know, get my one or two pheasants. I think I got two that day, and then back home. So, yeah, that's the way my luck works. I've got another 10 days left in the deer season. So at some point I'll crawl into the stand, but I've started focusing on trapping now. So now I've got that in my way.
Gotcha. Well, hey, you know what? To be a small game connoisseur, it's definitely opportunity over quantity at that point. If you've got a chance to go out and slay a bunch of geese, that's where it's at. I will give it to you that each person has their specialty. So it's fun to find someone who really dives into the birding, and the waterfowl and the upland. You said you got two pheasants, on that trip. I've been on one pheasant hunt, and I tell you what, I had a blast, no pun intended. Just walk in a field. It's far different than, say, the deer woods. Traditionally here in Michigan, you can get folks that'll do a deer drive, and so it becomes a social event. But that's a big piece of, I think, what's missing from that big game to small game aspect is that small game working together, having everybody join in, have a chance to talk, have a meeting before. Like, there's something social that I think is missing off the big game, where small game really takes advantage of that.
Absolutely. And I think one of my favorite things, you know, somebody asked me about, I was at a trapper's workshop this weekend, and somebody was kind of talking to me about sea duck hunting and how much I love it. And I was like, really, my favorite thing is the fact that I don't have to be quiet. I don't have to sit still. I will bring, usually we try to bring a new hunter with this, and we'll set the new hunter in the middle, and me and my friend sit on the side and we drink coffee, and I'm going to pull up and shoot the bird that I feel like shooting. Other than that, you know, just hang out and shoot the crap with your friends. Like, that's what I enjoy about it's that social aspect with the small game hunting. You get a little bit more of that than you do with the big game. You know, I can go sit in my tree stand by myself all I want, but you know, it's not quite the same as, you know, getting to watch the sun come up with your friends and find out what's going on with their life.
We jumped in right on this conversation talking about season. Justin, we've had you on. Like I mentioned, you're from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. You're part of the Armed Forces Initiative. Tell me more about what your role is in this organization. Tell me a little bit about what the Armed Forces Initiative does currently.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I guess I'll start. For those who aren't familiar with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, that's a grassroots organization dedicated to public lands and waters. There's lots of organizations out there that get specifically into one species, whether it's Pheasants Forever, you know, some are into ducks, some are, you know, there wasn't one that was dedicated just to the land. And so that's what this organization was created by. And so what they did is, you know, in 2018, they did a membership survey, as most organizations do, to kind of see who their organization is made up of. And what they found was about 12% of the organization was made up of either current military or former military. And the national average is around 6%. So somehow we've got double the amount of military members that are wanting to get involved in the outdoors, wanting to be involved in public land. So they start looking, and turns out that number was a little bit higher than the 12%. And then turns out not only was that happening, but most of our state boards and a lot of our leaders were from the military community. We even had the organization itself was founded by members of the military. We had members of the military on our national board. And so they were like, well, we did this on accident. What do we do if we cultivate it and if we tried? And so that's what they did. They decided to create a pilot program that specifically targeted our military community and how to get them into the outdoors and how to get them involved in conservation. So kind of that gateway ramp, not just into going out hunting and taking them out on a trip or two, But how do you get them that lifetime of trips? How do you get them involved in conservation? How do you get them speaking at Congress? How do you get them, you know, involved? And so that's where this came from. So what we do at the Armed Forces Initiative, we service active duty, reserves, National Guard, veterans, and Gold Star families. And we do, whether it's trips into the outdoors, so we've got hunting and fishing trips, we've got how-to trips, we do policy work, we do stewardship events in order to give you that community within the military. So, you know, get more with like-minded people that are in the same situation as you, maybe have seen what you've done, get a little bit of therapy, get a little bit, see how you can heal in the outdoors, and then give you that place to care about and give you a way to care about and to do something about it. So that's really what this is, you know, we kind of see it as adjunct outdoor therapy, meaning it's therapy that's outside, not with a therapist. But basically, you feel better outside. Everybody already knows it, but we're giving you a reason. We're giving you something to do. And then because we do it all on public lands and we try to focus on that teaching aspect, we want to give you that healing over and over and over again. And that's what we do, is we get you healing, we get you connected, and we get you involved, and I give you a bigger mission than yourself that you know you were used to in that military.
I'm not going to lie. I am someone who doesn't have a lot of trauma in my life. If I do, it's self-induced that I have done it to myself. This year, I noticed myself, I went on more morning hunts this year. More morning hunts than I've had in any other year. Normally, the morning was always one of those, like, I was intimidated on the darkness, and I couldn't figure out where I was going efficiently. I would get hung up. I would get frustrated. Like, working with my equipment in the dark, it was something I didn't appreciate. I liked the evening where I could go set that up and then have a plan of, like, how I'm going to get this stuff down in the dark and then be able to basically go home in the dark. But this year there was a big shift, and I think it was because my three boys are getting older. My three boys are getting louder, but my three boys like to sleep in. And so even though it's like a little sliver of therapy, I tell you what, drinking coffee 20 feet in the air is by far the best little piece of heaven that I have had in a long time. That the only thing chattering at me and wanting my attention or needing me to react is the squirrel 20 yards away that happened to pick me out and is now, you know, barking at me. Like, that was the only thing. And so now morning hunts has become my thing, my oasis, my escape. Before anybody gets up in the house, I'm already out of the door. And then I show up about, you know, 11:30. And then I jump back and I think I'm a better dad because of it. Is that kind of where you're taking people with actual heavy duty trauma? And this is, like you said, like an adjunct therapy, but just giving them a place to escape with people who have been there, who have done that, whether it's their hunting as a group or whether they've been on this mentorship, or it's just even like you've put together a program hunt that, hey, everybody's getting a chance to go out. Like, this is their opportunity to really, as much as we call it an adjunct therapy, but this is their chance to just decompress, get away, and maybe figure a few things out within themselves.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one of those things you talk about. Like, that's one of my favorite parts of it. I am an early morning person. Whether it's fishing, whether it's hunting, I do the early because my whole family, I got two boys and the wife, they all sleep in. And so I can usually sneak out, you know, if we're traveling somewhere where I want to fish, I can usually get out at 5 a.m. and fish real early. And just about the time the fish really start biting, I can get out of there and make it home in time for them to have breakfast and everything. And so I'm used to that. I love waking up with the woods, waking up with that quiet. And so, you know, for me, I found, you know, what happens is I kind of want to have a reason for it. You know, there's so many that talk about, oh, you know, they're getting outside just makes people feel better. You should go for those mental health walks, go for those hikes. And it's hard when you've got all the other stressors and things and responsibilities in your life. You know, you come back and, you know, for me, you know, when I got out, I had missed over half of my oldest son's life. And I had missed all of my youngest ones, at the time that I was out. And so you know, it's one of those, well, I can't, if I go out and just go walk, like, that's, it feels selfish. It feels like, yes, I know I feel better. Yes, I'm going to come back, you know, talk, just like you said, be a better dad, all of that, be more present. However, I don't have a reason for it. And what's really nice is that the hunting and fishing gives you a reason and gives you an excuse. You know, it makes it to where it's not just about you feeling better. It's you can tell yourself, I'm going here for a purpose. And that's one of the big things, you know, in that military community, we're so used to having a purpose. You know, if we were going to go walk and go on a ruck, you know, it was for a reason. It's so you can improve your mental, your physical fitness. You're going to go on a ruck because you've got to go on this patrol because this is what you're going to be doing. This is what you are doing. You know, you're out there being alert, walking with this heavy pack on your back. That's just what you do. And so to go back into it, that's one of the things, you know, you want to, it's just gives us a reason. And, you know, whether it's the early morning, whether it's an afternoon, you know, bird hunt, you know, whatever it is, giving them a reason gives them an excuse to get outdoors. And now we've kind of given them, again, that purpose, that repurpose, like, hey, you can feed your family. It's not selfish for you to go out there, you know, and yes, you're going to, now you can tell yourself, oh, I'm here because it's you know, it's going to make me feel better. I enjoy it, but I have a reason to do it.
I love that. I love that. I have two very close friends. I'll have to get into this with you, but they're, my two close friends were both Marines. One served in Afghanistan, one served in Iraq. And now when we do things, the one I go, we've gotten into mountain biking together as something that we go out and do. And when we go do that, you're hitting the nail on the head that he needs a purpose. He wants to get from A to B as quickly as he can. And he will blow us in the dust. Like, I'm still chugging up the hill trying to get up there. And he'll wait for us for maybe a couple minutes, but then, boom, he's gone. Because he's got an agenda that he has already put in his head, and he's already gone to do. The other buddy, it's funny when we go track a deer that somebody has shot, we don't call him till later. He's not the quietest person in the world. He's very much loud. He just trounces through things. But man, if when he grabs a hold of that hoof, he'll drag that sucker by himself if he needs to. He's a wealth of strength. He's just an ox, but it's like, yeah, if it needs to be quiet, if it needs to be, you know, you're still not sure if the animal's down yet. Yeah. We don't call him in quite yet. we wait till we get the drag out before we call him in. But that's
something to it. They're all very mission oriented. And so giving them that mission that you can put them into of this is what you need to do. Here it is. You know, we did a pheasant camp. You talked about that drive. You know, we pulled up what all the fields looked like. So we had overviews of all the fields, and we're doing, hey, this is the way the drive is going to go. Here's how we're going to pivot. Here's how everybody's going to move. And, you know, just making it look like the maneuvers, and everybody's familiar with it. And it's just, hey, this is the mission. Here's your objective. Here's where you're going to turn. We're going to, you know, go here, and then it's over. And it's just, yeah, the whole, all, you know, that's just kind of ingrained across all the branches. You know, you tell them this is what the mission is, this is the goal. You know, hey, that goal is, you know, if y'all are out biking, you know, the goal is is point B. All right, great. I'm going to go to point B. Like, that's what I'm supposed to do. The goal is to get this deer out of here. Yep, I'm going to get this deer out of here. Like, I don't care. Probably doesn't care how tired he gets, doesn't care. It's, boom, it's going to get out of there. That's his mission. So he's going to make it happen.
we would make them alpha team, and then I don't even think we would be beta. We would be like omega team. Me and the other guy that are drinking beer, like, listen, we'll get there when we get there. We're more of specialists, and we'll just arrive when we need to arrive. But that sense of purpose, like, not only on a scale of in an idea of an organization like BHA, where, yeah, you're trying to connect them with the outdoors, BHA is very much, we want to now not just be included in the outdoors, but we want to be the conversation. We want to be the game changers. We want to be the movers and the shakers. We want to have those boots on the ground changing how our public lands look. We want to take care of those parking areas. We want to pull trash out of everywhere we need. I don't think I've seen a lot of it here in Michigan. I mean, we've seen a lot of like river cleanup, but out west, pulling fences and clearing up access for use of those lands. Is the Armed Forces Initiative also looking at that point too? Like, man, what a sense of a mission. Like, hey, we got to go wrap up this section of public lands. We got to get access to it. We need to remove this fence, or we need to clean up this waterway. Is that also a place where the initiative has been able to use that mission-driven focus of our servicemen?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been really good. We've been seeing stuff. That was kind of the part of the goal here is, you know, BHA's got these little fence poles and that sort of thing planned. Well, hey, let's get the military out there. Let's get, you know, there's National Guard units everywhere. So one of our most recent events that we did here at the Washington AFI is we did what we call the garbage and grouse. So we show up to a public shooting range. We clean up a shooting range, and then we go grouse hunting afterwards. So this was our second year doing it. And we brought an entire National Guard unit in. They said, great, we'll be there. They happened to have a drill weekend and nothing going on. So they were like, great, let's give back. It's in our backyard. We had a unit in New York show up to a cleanup. Great, they were there. Bunch of officers. I think we're doing an officer's course. Bring them up. And then we recently did a fence pull near the Yellowstone National Park The farmer was so grateful, invited all of our people back to antelope hunt if they ever drew the tag, which is great because awesome. It gave them, here's some access, here's some ways to get on some public land. We're protecting the antelope. But yeah, we do all kinds. You know, we helped out our first year. We did a Bob Marshall Wilderness cleanup. So we went out with the Bob Marshall Wilderness Foundation and went in on horseback. Hal Herring wrote a paper for that on An Outdoor Life, and so you can read all about it. But yeah, we went into the backcountry, into the wilderness areas, and you know, did trail cleanup and got it ready for the season before anybody else could get back there. You know, and that's just a great use. And really, the military's been used for our public lands for a very long time. The very first enforcement officers into the Yellowstone was the Army. So if you read the history of Yellowstone, there was so much poaching, so many issues there. And finally, they just decided, like, let's send the Army down there. And so the Army became the ones who were stocking the lakes, stopping the poachers, bringing in bison. You know, it was the Army who brought in bison to bring that population back. It was down to 23 bison. And the Army's the one who brought in more bison and brought them in to get them back. You've got all of your different trails. You know, you look at Hawaii, some of those trails that have been there on some of those national areas. Those are all done by the Army. So there's a very long history of the Army maintaining our public lands and waters, and the military just being out there, taking care of it, being the tools of our nation to build the trails, to maintain them, and to get everything going. So, yeah, there's just a long-standing history. And really, like, you know, we tell our people at our courses, these lands, you know, the federal ones are locked into the Constitution. They're part of the property clause. So all of us raised our right hand. We swore to defend the Constitution. And when we did that, we swore to defend public lands. We let them know, whether you know it or not, you swore to defend these lands that belong to all of us. And, you know, hey, you've fought for them. You know, you've given up your freedoms for them. These are yours. Come use them. Come protect them. And that puts a sense of ownership. And then you find that once we've got that ownership of, hey, you can go recreate here, you can go camp here, you can go hunt here, you can take your family here. Now they have a reason to care about it. And now they're gonna come out. Now they're gonna come give up their time, give up their opening day of deer season to show up and clean up this shooting pitch so everybody can come out and do it later. And you know, that sense of community, that sense of purpose, always rings true. And they've got a mission. We start in the morning telling them, hey, this is what's got to get done. There's no arguments. There's no fighting in it. Everybody just kind of listens to whoever's in charge. And, you know, that all those things of, you know, that you learned in the military, you know, that chain of command and everything just works because, you know, everybody listens. They all work together. We know we have one mission. We know we're not going to get out of here until it's done, you know. And so, yeah, the missions just get accomplished. And so BHA has really been able to leverage that And we're looking to do more in 2024. We actually have asked every single one of our chapters within AFI, which is, I think, 46 state liaisons and 23 active duty installations. We've asked every single one of them to do at least one conservation event. So we should be seeing just out of the military community, you know, somewhere in the range of 60 to 70 conservation events on top of all the ones that BHA normally does.
Dry aged steaks used to be a steakhouse-only indulgence. An old-world charcuterie was pricey due to being imported or created at a small batch-specific scale. Thanks to UmiDry, their synthetic dry aging bags and casings allow you to create these meat crafting treats in your own kitchen. Working in tandem with your fridge, the UmiDry bag material allows moisture and air to pass through, making it possible to dry age large cuts of steaks or roasts. Paired with their curing and seasoning kits, along with safe and easy to follow instructions, salamis and dry sausage are well within your grasp. Use the link in the show notes and sign up for the newsletter to receive 10% off your order. UmiDry, helping us elevate our wild game from the home kitchen. When in the field, accuracy and precision count. That's why we switch our slug guns to rifled barrels, tune our arrows, and use a fish finder on the water. But why should our drive for control end there? The Tapiq line of meat probes gives an instantaneous look at the temperatures of our prized meals, both internal and in the cooking chamber. Tapiq uses sturdy hardware made and assembled here in the U.S., along with their user-friendly, sophisticated software that connects to your smart device. Whether it's a traditional corded probe or the new cordless air probes that give you a wealth of freedom where wires would just get in the way. Adding a Tapiq meat probe can significantly help in getting to that medium rare on venison or waterfowl, ensuring your upland bird stays moist, or even charting your long cooks on a smoker. Visit tapiq.com or find the link in the show notes and use the code HUNT10, all uppercase, at checkout to save 10%. Adding a probe to your kit can make you one tap away from your queue.
To kind of turn this a little bit too, Justin, tell me a little bit about your experience. Which branch did you serve in? And I think you told us a little bit earlier, like 2011 to 2018, you were in active service. Talk a little bit about how personally your involvement now, being back home and now working for BHA, how's that been helpful for you as you've been, again, probably trying to look for that mission? Yeah, this is a job, but are you finding meaning in this job as you're also helping out other fellow servicemen?
Well, and I'll even start out. This isn't even my job. I am a volunteer. We only have one paid person on the military side. So of all these liaisons and all these people in our board, all of us volunteer our time. We do this because we love it, because we believe in the mission, we believe in the organization, we believe in what we're doing and helping others. So, you know, I'll even start with that, you know, hey, I believe it so much. I spend a ton of time doing this, but it's because I love it and I love what we've done. But, you know, I can kind of get into my service a little bit. I started, joined the military in 2011. Basically, I dropped out of college, was in a small town in Texas, and realized I wasn't going anywhere and wanted to see the world. So, went down to the recruiting station. They shipped me off, and, you know, went through basic training. Was a military police officer, and I went, my first duty station was Germany. And so I wanted to see the world. What better way than to go into Europe? You know, from small town, never would have really thought I was ever going to do that. And, you know, I really started out my first year there. I kind of did the single soldier thing. You know, so I was seeing my wife. We were doing the long distance. And so I was going to the bars with my friends. I was partying. I was just getting drunk on the weekends. That's kind of what I did. It's kind of what most service members did. Wife came over, calmed down a little bit. But what happened for me is I'd gone over there. I was on patrol one night, and somebody I knew, got a call to go to their house off base, and they were trying to unalive themselves. They were having a PTSD alcohol-induced episode. I'm the one who got the call. So I show up on patrol, talk them down, talking with them, get them over to the hospital, get them the help they need. you know, the next time I see them, they worked at the Outdoor Recreation Center. I'm on a small little base. It's 3 miles around all the way around, and get to go see him, and he starts getting back into fly fishing. And he opens up and says, "Hey, I've got a fly tying class. You want to come do it?" I had nothing going on. Like, sure, grab a couple of friends. Let's go learn how to tie flies. I've never fly fished before. Sure, I'll learn how to tie. Next thing I know, he's teaching me how to cast. And I'm working with him. He's, you know, quit drinking. This became his recovery, was going fishing and using the outdoors in Germany. So he's taking me out, teaching me how to access the river systems. You know, I took my course in Germany to go fishing. And then we used it to start inviting more service members out. So we were bringing as many people as I could. If I met him, I taught him, like, "Hey, come out here, come take this class, come go fishing with me." And then we used it to remove invasive species. So we would go fishing to remove rainbow trout. We were on these small rivers that they were like, "Hey, the Germans said, kill every single rainbow, put every brown trout back." So that's what we're doing. We're fly fishing. You catch a rainbow, you bonk it on the head, you throw it in, up on the bank, let the herons eat it, because we're trying to remove them from the system. Then I learn about this other river system that has crawfish stuck in it. They accidentally released signal crawfish from Washington, and they exploded. And so I'm teaching people how to make crawfish traps out of fans that we'd find at the dump. So we'd go by at the dump every single night on patrol and try to find those cages from the fans that go on the floor, and filling them with badger guts or whatever else we could get from the local hunters. Catching all the crawfish we could, dropping them off in our patrol vehicles, coming back and then picking them up in our personal vehicles, and having a crawfish boil. And so removing the invasive species is kind of what got me involved and got me doing something positive. While I was there, I had a ton of fun. I got to explore Europe, which was something that, you know, I feel like, you know, I almost felt like I wasted my first year, because that second year I went horseback riding through the Italian Alps. I went fly fishing in the Austrian Alps. I went everywhere throughout Europe. I ended up catching fish in 5 different countries. I then came here to Washington, and, you know, kind of the same thing. I got into the fishing, and, you know, I got behind some good dogs to kind of work some pheasant hunting, and really enjoyed it. And, you know, then I went, you know, tried to get as many people involved as possible. And I went to Korea, and, you know, same thing. I took all my fishing gear there and got out and went fishing. I was catching Korean river tarpon, and there's some amazing bass fishing, because bass fishing was really big in the 70s in Korea. And so they released largemouth bass all over the country. And so you get out there and you're just fishing for bass and, you know, and catching carp and everything else, and bringing these service members with me. And when I get out, you know, I realize, one, like, how lucky I was. And then talking to some people, like, "Hey, some people would move, and if you don't have that person to connect with when you move, you're not going to get out." And so I get out, and I come back, and I decide to stay in Washington. I didn't want to be too far from public land, so I didn't go back to Texas. There was no way I'm going back. Texas is too far from Montana for me. So this is where, you know, we decided to stay. And I'm outside of the base, and, you know, every now and then we would see these posts get on of, "Hey, I'm new to the area. I want to go hunting. Can somebody take me out? Where can I go? How can I do X, Y, and Z?" And they would either get crickets, or they would just get blasted on social media. And so, you know, I took it upon myself. I had somebody who starts talking, and he's like, "I'm a new hunter. I want to get into it." You know, and basically people are like, "Oh, you know, don't hunt in this state anyways, and read the regs." And finally I messaged him. I was like, "Hey, you know, why don't you come on a bear hunt with me?" Again, not a great big game hunter, but I was like, "I know where there's a bear. I'm going to go hunt this one specific one. You can come with me. I don't care if I get this bear or not. I want to wake up in the woods. So I'm going to go, you know, here it is. Come with me. We're going to go out here." And took him on a bear hunt. Person had an amazing time. You know, then I took a couple more out, and, you know, I stayed in touch with them, and really waterfowl season rolls around. And there's a lot of organizations that take veterans out on basically one-time, essentially guided hunts. And there's 2 guided hunts come up available on the same weekend. I can't go, and I send 2 of the people that I'm working with to go. One goes up north, one goes down south, and the one who went up north calls me after he's done it. I went, not a hunter. "Oh my gosh, I had the most amazing time. I love it. I went and bought a shotgun. I bought waders. I bought decoys. I bought a call. When can we go duck hunting? At which time I had to let him know that I don't duck hunt. And the next person calls me and same thing. It's like, yeah, great. Where can I go now? And I'm like, I have no idea. Like, I don't duck hunt. Like, I mean, it's available. There's ducks, you know? And I realized very quickly that if I didn't go take them out, again, we created a hunter and now we're going to lose them. And so, you know, I mentored four people throughout that season, just duck hunting. And so we went duck hunting, goose hunting, met a lot of good friends, you know, got onto different leases, tried some public land, you know, went out on kayaks, all kinds of stuff, whatever we could figure out. And that next year I was like, man, I really got to figure out a way to expand what I'm doing because I really enjoyed it. It gave back, you know, it allowed me an opportunity to get outside. It allowed me a chance to share public lands because I got very into just public lands. I loved them. Being from Texas, I never had them. And so when I kind of learned that I could just go out and hunt and fish and camp in these areas, blew my mind. And so I wanted everybody to understand, like, hey, when you get stationed here at Fort Lewis, like, there's a lot of opportunities for you, and you don't have to give up hunting. You don't have to sell all of your guns. Like, you can go. You can get them here, and you can just go out, and there's sections of land that you can just walk out onto, and there are deer and elk and bear and cougar and everything else for you. And so this was 2020. So 2021, I had a really good year. Basically, I told myself I'm going to find an organization to work with. And I had a year where I just did everything. I went blacktail hunting here in Washington out on the coast. And I went turkey hunting in Idaho. And I went salmon fishing in Alaska. And, you know, I just did a lot of events. And finally, the one that stuck with me is I went fly fishing on the Yellowstone River with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Armed Forces Initiative. It was their second event. I was lucky enough to be chosen. It was around my birthday. My wife was like, just go. You know, tickets were cheap for me to fly over there. And so I went over and got to meet everybody. It was a dozen of us. And, you know, what really struck me was not just, hey, I'm taking you out on this trip. They broke it down from the very beginning. You know, they had brand new fly fishers. So we started out with casting lessons, then an entomology class. Then we went into a fly shop to learn how to talk to a fly, you know, to a fly shop. We went and wade fished in two different areas. That way they learned about access. Like I'd been going to Montana 2 to 3 times a year already just to go fly fishing. And so kind of knew it, but it was great to see like, hey, they've got this model. And then we got to be some guided, 2 days of guided fishing on the Yellowstone, which was my absolute dream. And I still got to go back. My bucket list is to catch a Yellowstone cutthroat on the Yellowstone. I cut a massive brown trout, and everybody's like, that's the trip, fish of the trip. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not my goal. I'd rather catch a 6-inch cutthroat, but, you know, here's this 20-inch brown, sure. and, you know, just an absolute great trip. And then not only did we just get those 2 days guided, but we actually had to work the sticks ourselves. So we got a chance to row the guides around and learn how to work a rowboat on this iconic river. And I was like, well, this is the organization for me. If this is what they're going to do is teach people how to get out here. I called them up and said, what do you need me to do? I was like, I'm here for it. And so they asked me to join the national board. I started out doing policy work. My degree's in fish and wildlife management. And so it seemed like a natural fit. Yeah. And after a little while, I noticed our social media was just, and this is so true in the hook and bullet space, is the traditional hook and bullet space, the social media is a little rough. We do a pretty terrible job of telling our story. You know, we can remember to snap some pictures at the end, but that story along the get-go and being able to tell the story the right way that shows the meaning to us was lost. And I kind of noticed that with our social media. And so finally I was like, look, I'm taking over. Just here, give it to me. They gave me the passwords. And so that's kind of been it. I took over the social media and started focusing on our media, got more into photography. I'd done a little bit of photography stuff with the Audubon Society and with some other wildlife organizations before. So I was like, I have a decent camera and let's just make sure that we capture images at our camps. And so did a big push on that, and rest has been history. You know, we've grown well, been able to tell the story. You know, we've had some filmmakers come out with us. So we have right now, we've got on our YouTube channel, you can find Expanding Boundaries, which shows us taking 12 people into the Boundary Water Canoe area. We'll be having early 2024. We're going to have one come out about our recent Alaska caribou hunt. So, you know, we've just been focusing a lot more on getting the media and telling the story of what we're doing and of these veterans and getting them outside. And, so there's everything all encompassing. I don't even remember the full story, but there it is. I was in the Army from 2011 to 2018, got out and got, you know, pretty quickly got involved with this, and this consumes as much of my time as I let it.
Oh my goodness, Justin, that was an epic story. Beginning out with you in Germany, enjoying the Heffenweisens way too much at the bar, and basically having life come at you full force with a fellow serviceman who was in a moment of need, and that right there started you on your journey of fly fishing and then all the adventures that you went on. I will say, as I'm hearing the story here, I'm also hearing BHA, even though they took you on the fishing trip to have you catch a fish, they're the ones that hooked the lunker right now, Justin. They got a hold of you and you have been put to work, my friend. But at the same time, hearing you tell that story, just hearing, on the video here, seeing you light up, seeing just the way that you've been able to talk about the experiences you've had, the different types of game you've been able to chase, and just the knowledge that you have gained, like, has made such an impact on your life, and then you being able to share that with others. Just like you said a little while ago, like, we created this hunter, now we need to cultivate it, now we need to foster this new hunter as they get out. Where can they go? Well, where better than lands that belong to all of us? We all have stakes in that. What better place to take them that belongs to all of us? So I am just so thankful that you were able to share that personal accord between you and our public grounds.
Yeah, and I would say it's not even that BHA caught me. Like, the military community has got so many people that, especially when we get out, we just want to give. And we want to give back. We're so used to a mission bigger than ourselves. And BHA just gave us the vessel to do so. You know, they gave me they caught me at the right time, in the right way. And, you know, our liaisons and our volunteers are absolutely incredible. Some of the things that they're putting together, I'm blown away. Like, these opportunities wouldn't exist if it wasn't for everybody else that we have that's putting on the work. And as soon as one of them hears it and gets involved and they come to a camp, the next thing you know, they're running their own camp. The next thing you know, they're bringing out two people. They're sending us media. They're writing stories. They're putting in, I think we've had probably four or five of our camps have been written about in various magazines because, you know, they come through and they write it and they're like, I'm going to go send it off to, you know, I think we had Shooting Sportsman and Strung Magazine and Fly Fishing International. It's like, great, send them off. Like, tell everyone how much fun you had and what an incredible journey you've had. And we have such amazing talents in this military community. And it's just a matter of finding the way to get them involved.
I'm also going to, we're going to drop a bomb here. You were alluding earlier as we were talking that the Armed Forces Initiative, the AFI, is going to make a big move here in 2024. Now, we're finishing up here in 2023, but there's going to be some big announcements here about some changes that are going on with the initiative. Are you able to open up a little bit about those?
Yeah, so this, you know, kind of talked about what started here is BHA realized, hey, we want to cultivate this, the armed forces, and we want to bring in, see what happens if we try to bring in some of the military. And we did not think that it was going to grow the way it did. In 2021, we took out 18 veterans into a Montana mule deer camp. or I guess that was end of 2020. That's where it started with 18 veterans in a mule deer camp. And this last year, so in 2023, we're going to be over 2,000 people into the outdoors. So over 2,000 participants at our camps just during 2023. That's not counting the 1,700 that we took out in 2022. That's not counting whatever we're going to do in 2024. And we did not anticipate that growth. This was a program. This was supposed to be an initiative. It was a trial. They kind of got some money to pay for one hired person. And they thought, you know, what? Great. You know, if he can get 60 new people to join in, you know, that'd be good. And we did not see this growth. And the support that's been around this community has been incredible. And so what they found is, hey, we've been running this for a couple of years. This is no longer just an initiative. This is no longer just a small program. You know, this is off and running. So we're going to do a shift. Before, our board was what we called an advisory board. And so each one of us had our own section that we were kind of supposed to be the experts in. And we're supposed to help our coordinator basically run everything, which he was run ragged. I think that one year he spent 260 days on the road. And we put him to work, which was incredible. And now, because of this and how well everything's running, BHA said, well, you know what? I think it's time to start looking more like a regular chapter. And so we are now changing from an advisory board where this staff member has all the power and we just kind of help guide and help out where we can and do what we can to help everything running. It's going to look more like a regular nonprofit chapter. And so we will have a chair, vice chair, secretary. We're in the middle of actively recruiting for that. So if anybody's military Gold Star spouse is out there listening to this, follow AFI, go to our page. We actually have the top link in our link tree. Has how to apply and what we're looking for. And we're looking for talented people who want to give back, who want to give their time and their, you know, their talents to us. That's what we're looking for. And so we're going to have this full board. I still have all of our liaisons, still have our installations that we have going, but we're going to look a little bit more like a chapter. And so we're in a big shift right now to, yeah, no longer be a program, but be a full-fledged chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, which is incredible. It just shows, you know, how much this has grown, what this is like, and I think that we did way more with way less than anybody thought we ever could. And you know, just thanks to everybody that's happened. So yeah, you'll get on there right now. I think we may have made one post about it, but yeah, we'll be actively recruiting for 2024 to increase our board. And we're going to shift from we had one person who's in charge of our installations and one person that was in charge of our states. And we're moving to an east-west format. So it's going to look a little different. But at the local levels, everything's going to look the same. You know, that's the big thing, is we're trying to keep it as much the same as possible and be able to keep up with the growth, because that's been the hardest part. Is we know that in 2024, you know, we took out 2,000 people in 2023. Who knows where we're going to go? Everybody's got a few events under their belt, so everybody's going to want to do a few. I know Washington last year we did 16 events here, and I think our planning session we started with 17. And there's like five that are like floating around of like, these would be great ideas. So, you know, it's incredible to see how much everybody's doing. So yeah, you will see it. If anybody's listening and you want to get involved, right now is the perfect time, for you to reach out, because we're going to need every position right now.
Sounds good. Hey, you know what? Growing pains. Those are the fun things to have when you have way too many people wanting to jump in and help out, and then now you're just scrambling trying to find a spot for everyone. That's the pains that you want right there. So, Justin, that's exciting. I'll make sure in the show notes, so folks, if you really want to check that out, I'll make sure to have the links to the link tree or to the Instagram here for BHA AFI. I'll make sure to have that on there so that, yeah, click those links to follow onto what you guys are doing at BHA so people can continue to be involved. I'll try to put those in there.
Great. We appreciate it.
That's awesome. Well, Justin, I don't know if you know, but this is a podcast that's all about using that wild game, whether you got it on private land, whether you got it on our beautiful, everybody owns public land. What my podcast really focuses on is the after the shot. And so being able to bring back the wonderful game that you've been able to get and to harvest that beautiful, amazing protein is what really warms my heart. So I'm bringing you up with our last little crescendo here. This is the two-dish breakdown. The two-dish breakdown is where I'm going to give you basically a scenario, and then I'm going to have you answer how you're going to prepare a specific species or a specific dish based on that criteria. First one's easy. I like to give a softball on the first one. So anyway, here's the soft pitch down the middle. What is a meat treat that you bring on an event or you bring that you're able to share? Are you a summer sausage guy, or is it going to be jerky that you're going to be bringing?
Oh, man. And I will go, while I do make both of those, if you're at one of our events, I do like to cook. And so I'm going to bring every one of our events. If you're there and I'm showing up to it, I'm showing up with, more than likely, I've got some wild boar bratwurst. And I do actually have, I have some sheep that my wife wants me to get rid of. And that's usually the hit for everybody. It's not wild. It's a domestic sheep. But I bring ground sheep because my wife, we processed three of them and she doesn't like it. So it shows up to everyone. But with that, you're going to get those cheap burritos, but the brats, I've got this dish that I make. So if I ever have a cabin available to me, it's a one pan dish, 30 minutes. Basically I cut up potatoes, apples, carrots, and usually like a parsnip or some other root vegetable. Mix all that together with olive oil, honey from my bees, because I also keep bees, and then whatever spices I have around. I'll slide all that onto a tray, lay the brats right on top, cook them for 30 minutes at 350. They come out perfect every single time, and that honey gets all over the apples. It gets all over the brats, and so you just end up with this sweet, apple-y brats that are absolutely amazing. So, yeah, if you show up to one of our camps, you're at least going to be fed. If you show up with one where I'm at, you know, you're going to be getting some of that for sure. And then, of course, whatever we cook. But that's what I'm bringing. If I can, I'm probably going to bring one of those to any of our camps.
That's awesome. Oh, just going with that hearty veg and the apples mixed with, yeah, homegrown honey. That's a winner right there off some boar brats. Oh, that's a great one. You smoked it out of the park. That was a softball. This one now, it's going to involve a little bit more detail. It's going to take some finesse. You mentioned you were a waterfowler. We want a waterfowl dish. We want a waterfowl dish that's going to turn some heads and also really help with that presentation punch. We want to make sure that skin is crispy. How are you preparing duck or goose the way that you love to serve duck or goose?
So the way I like it, and I actually like to eat the ducks that nobody likes. So I eat a lot of mergansers. I'll shoot a lot of sea ducks, the stuff that nobody likes. So those are the things that I want to really bring out. So I'm going to start out, though, with my favorite, which is going to be those duck poppers, those jalapeno poppers. I'm either going to use teal or widgeon or gadwall. I get a lot of widgeon, so widgeon end up in those jalapeno poppers. So ease people into the duck with, here's something nice and familiar and it's good. And then you hear bad things about all your sea ducks. And so I like sea duck bulgogi. And that's probably my favorite. So what I do is I actually cube it up. I'll skin it. I don't let my ducks hang. I take care of them. I don't care if I get back and it's, you know, 9 o'clock at night. I'm taking care of those ducks before I get into the bed. So I'm All my sea ducks, I'm taking all the skin off. I'm taking all the fat off. I'm going to have just a breast. I'm going to take the meat off the legs and thighs. And then I'm going to dump it all into orange juice. And so it's going to soak in orange juice all night. And then I'm going to pull it out about an hour before, and I'm going to create a bulgogi sauce. And sometimes I get the store-bought, but if I can make it myself, I'll make my own bulgogi. I put a little bit of my honey in there just because I've got so much of it. I have to use it for everything, so I put a little bit of honey in there. I'm going to let that marinade, and then I'm going to just heat that up in the skillet, try to get, you know, medium rare. You don't want to overcook the duck. And then I'm going to serve it on top of rice with sesame seeds, some green onion that's chopped. Usually I'll roast some broccoli with it. But that's the dish that I get, especially for people who, like, I'm not going to eat sea duck and I won't eat merganser and all that. You change their mind when you soak it in orange juice and when you turn it into that that bulgogi, which, of course, takes me back to Korea. It's one of my favorite Korean dishes. You know, we eat a lot of bulgogi. And so, yeah, that's the dish that is going to turn heads, especially for those that have heard anything about waterfowl hunting. They're going to be like, oh, there's no way. I'm never going to eat that. It's going to taste fishy. No, it's not. It's going to taste absolutely amazing, and you're going to love it.
Oh, I'm already – I got a buddy who loves to goose hunt, but then he doesn't enjoy the goose, which at the same point, I used to be like, dude, you need to utilize it. You need to do it. But then I realized he just gifted me the geese. So I was like, you know what? Okay, I'll keep my mouth shut. I'll keep taking these things.
Yeah.
But
orange
that,
goose. That's orange my favorite. Goose
sounds awesome. That sounds like a great, great dish that I need to partake in.
Yeah, it's really good because at right now we order big boxes of oranges from this little tiny farm in California. And so they're only sending them at the peak of harvest. And so we order the box. And so when the box of oranges shows up, that's when the orange chicken or the orange duck and the orange goose starts. So I'll go ahead. That way you've got the fresh zest because they pick them and throw them right in the box and ship them to your door. So fresh oranges, absolutely amazing zest. I'll fresh squeeze the orange juice to soak it in. I'll use some of that orange juice for making the orange sauce. But yeah, orange goose or orange. I started that one because of surf scoter. Cause that's another one that people don't want to eat, but I shoot a lot of them. So yeah, orange waterfowl. It's good.
I love it. Being in Korea, did you get into kimbap, the pre-cooked sushi scene? Did you get into that at all?
No, I didn't. Not really. One thing that I did get into was the ramen. That was another interesting one. They had a little ramen shop outside, and I was used to college ramen.
Completely different.
Yeah, and it was great. They put like a slice of American cheese right on top, and I was like, this is weird, and then it just melts into it, gets all gooey, and I was like, well, this is a game changer. This is now something I love. That and of course the Korean barbecue, where you just go and it's just, you know, we called it beef and leaf, and just they just bring you out slabs of meat and, you know, usually some garlic and just these random you know, every place had their different leaf that they would use, and you cook the meat right on top, like in the middle in the little hibachi grill, essentially, and, you know, throw it on the leaf with some garlic and some bean paste and everything. So good. Yeah, I definitely enjoyed my time, but no, I didn't get into the different sushi things or anything like that. It's just never been, not been my thing.
Well, Justin, this has just been an awesome hour, man. I have thoroughly enjoyed not only your passion for the outdoors, the passion for just like, I mean, you're just describing a little bit about your own hobby farm, and you're just taking the investment into your own food, your own sustenance that's going to fuel you, and then coupling that with just your passion for the armed forces and for public lands has just been so neat. Remind my listeners again, where can they get in touch with you? Where can they find out more about the Armed Forces Initiative through BHA, and how can they get involved?
Well, if you're using the Google machine, just type in Armed Forces Initiative. We're going to pop up. If you're on Instagram, BHA_AFI, that's going to take you right to the Instagram that I run, which is how I've got in touch with you, Nick. And then if you need to get in touch with somebody, email, you know, go ahead. I'm a great one. I'm probably going to bounce out whatever you say to me, out to whoever it needs to go to. But if you type in AFICOMS, so that's COMMS at backcountryhunters.org, email me. I'm going to get you in touch with the person that you need to. If you just want to get involved in your state, most of our state emails are listed on our website. And if you're ever in doubt, usually it's the state initials followed by AFI. So for Washington, it's WAAFI at backcountryhunters.org. And that'll get you to your state liaison who's going to be running events in your area.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Justin, I'm going to go ahead and hold on for just a second. I'm going to let our listeners on out. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this past hour where we just got a chance to really dive into an awesome initiative that's about to turn into a chapter. Things are happening over here at the Armed Forces Initiative. There are veterans, there are active members, there are people that protect our nation day in and day out who are needing a spot to go. They need to understand that they can use the public lands that we have across our entire nation, whether it's, you know, here in Michigan where it's going to be a small pocket down the road that everybody goes to, or whether it's going out to the huge expanses that are out west. There is a spot for everybody to have a chance to either pursue game, wade after and be able to hook up on some fish, or even just go look at some birds and just be out in nature to get away from it all. That is such a neat thing that's happening going on, and I just applaud the folks over here from the BHA AFI taking on that challenge and helping the people that help us out the most, keeping us safe. Let's give them a place to be able to decompress, to get a little bit of that therapy, and have a chance to have amazing experiences in this country. So folks, if you want to get involved, check those links down at the bottom. If you want to get some of that public land meat on your table, well, you'll have to head out there to get it. But whether you're going to be using that knife to pull out fence, or using the knife in a work setting to try and clean up an area or take out fence posts, or if it's going to make bulgogi while you're at home, make sure that blade that you're using is always sharp.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.